Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Even that conversation tells us we're living in an age of uncertainty locally and globally and environmentally. War is raging in many parts of the world. The environmental crisis, the rise of extremism, and this year we'll see the largest number of people voting right across the globe. Dr. Paul Dalton, Associate Professor of Psychology at UCD, is back with us today in the third of a four-part series to help us navigate this age of uncertainty. Paul, you're very welcome back to the programme.
Thank you, Cormac.
You might give us a quick summary for listeners who might have missed your previous input as to what we're doing here.
So over the last few weeks, Cormac, we've been talking about this, living in a world of uncertainty and how it's impacting on us at certain stages of our lives. So we talked about the kind of decades in our lives that we have certain jobs to do. So in adolescence, it's about identity formation versus identity crisis. In early adulthood, the kind of 20 to 40 year old, our task is about achieving intimacy or closeness outside of our family of origin. And in adulthood proper, the kind of 40 to 65-ish, we have a different psychological job to do. And this job is called generativity. In other words, it's about generating something. So we'll come back to that. But to recap, I have been offering kind of practical suggestions or ways to kind of help us find our feet in this age of uncertainty, ways that we can try and build our psychological capacity or resilience in order to get our jobs done. Mm-hmm. And these strategies are what I call the four C's: conversation, control, contentment, and compassion. And today we're going to look at contentment, particularly during adulthood, the 40 to 65 years of age. And a really important caveat, Cormac, before I go any further, these are skills. They require repetition, commitment, and dedication. Simply put, you know, what we practice at, we get better at. And I've said quite a few times here, there is no psychological quick fix, but there are skills that we can cultivate to build resilience and to help us find our feet in the middle of this.
And on that then, these skills that we need to practice every day, is that why you've chosen contentment as opposed to happiness?
Well, really good question. Because the distinction between contentment and happiness is a really, really interesting one. And I'll come back to that, Cormac, but just to say something about the life stage, Cormac. So the kind of 40 to 65 year old, the job to do there, or the crisis that we face at this point in our lives, is what Erikson, well regarded psychologist, says is generativity versus stagnation. So that means we can generate something in our lives or we can stagnate. So middle age, we're driven by the need to create or to nurture things that will outlast us. Now, that's the really, really important thing. Sometimes people do that through children, often through fostering change in other areas that will benefit people. Generativity, Cormac, because it's a funny word, I often think generativity is about leaving our mark. Mm-hmm. What is our mark going to be on this world? And it's interesting because when you look at the literature in this, one of the things that seems to generate generativity, that seems to support us making a difference in the world, is what they call kind of civic activism. So what kind of role are we playing in our society so that we're going to leave the world a little bit different for the generation that come after us?
And Paul, do we automatically start to sort of think that way as we get older, like into our 40s and 50s, or not?
No, Sarah, come here. Really good question. So what seems to happen, Sarah, is in our early 40s, many of us will go through some form of midlife crisis. And the midlife crisis, the challenge that we face in our early 40s, is because the currency of our life to that point is no longer useful to us. So in some ways, Sarah, it's really important for the first half of our lives, if you like, if we're lucky, to pursue happiness. But happiness as a currency doesn't have the same value as we get older. So often, Sarah, you'll see, or we begin to kind of feel we're stagnating in our early 40s.
Mm.
We begin to feel, oh, I'm kind of at a remove here. I've lost my energy for stuff. I feel kind of dull and a little bit dead inside. And we've all met older adults who have stagnated. And there's a palpable kind of emotional dehydration. We get prickly and dried up and brittle and lonely. So our task as we move into our 40s, into our 50s and 60s and mid 60s, is to create, to make our mark. And
okay, to have the feeling that, I suppose, your life is going to make some sort of difference to somebody.
Yeah, Sarah, and that does not need to be anything fantastic. You know, we don't need to be doing wonderful, amazing things. But what is my contribution? So we've said in the last couple of weeks, Sarah, you know, about the younger adult, that the question up to the kind of 40 is can I love and can I be loved? And when we get into our 40s and onwards, the question is, can I care? Can I care and provide something for the next generation? And as I said, it doesn't need to be monumental.
What does it need to be then? Does that depend on the individual?
It does, Cormac. And as we said, sometimes it's people will do that very directly through having children. Other times people will find that role in aspects of what they do in work, how they might mentor, how they might be involved in a local community, how they might treat their next door neighbour. So it doesn't need to be fabulous. It doesn't need to be spectacular. But there are ways that we can generate, that we can make something to leave behind for future generations.
Can I ask you this? And I'm sure you've come across this. What of those people who maybe do have children and do pursue a purpose, be it in a job or in the community, and still are not contented?
Yeah, because they're not the magic answer, are they? You know, having just having children.
Can I just interject for a second, because it seems for an awful lot of people, and I'm in my 40s, for an awful lot of people in my generation, we were told to go to college, we were told to pursue education and so on and do the right thing. And suddenly the housing crisis and so on has pushed everything further away.
Yeah.
And you're saying to yourself, this was supposed to make me happy.
Yeah.
So where do I go from here?
You know, Cormac, completely. And in all of these kinds of conversations, I really, really need to stress the impact that the world, the reality of the world we're living in, is having on us in achieving what we should be achieving at certain generations on our lives. Mm. So what we've been talking about is that the kind of the poly crisis, the housing crisis being part of that, and what's going on globally being part of that, the impending or the actual environmental crisis. These things are getting in the way of us achieving what we should be achieving at these points in our lives. And there's no quick fix to that.
Okay.
But there are some things that we can do. Sorry, Sarah. So
you might just tell us then about contentment and the difference between contentment and happiness.
Well, Sarah, it kind of bounces on from Cormac's point about happiness.
Mm.
You know, as a people, and actually as psychologists and people like me in this kind of business, we have oversold happiness. As a pursuit. In fact, it's a very influential, probably one of the more influential things I've read, a guy called Barry Midgett, who's written a book about ending the pursuit of happiness, that our pursuit of happiness is actually making us miserable. So then we go, well, hang on, what do we do? And come here, there is nothing wrong with happiness. We all want and deserve a bit of happiness, okay? But if it's the North Star as we get a little bit older, we're in trouble, because it requires a different currency. So, Sarah, What we need to be setting our compass towards is contentment. And when you look at the literature, the research around the world and on contentment, what it says is actually historically and ancient societies valued contentment more than anything else. And they often saw it as the most or the highest state to cultivate in life, a sense of contentment. And people kind of say, well, what is contentment? You know, can we define it or describe it? It's very hard to do that. But Sarah or Cormac, we know contentment because contentment happens in the body. We feel it. Mm. It's that situation when, you know, we had a big Easter lunch a few weeks ago and all the work that's involved in that. And that moment when you're sitting across the table and you're looking at people around you and going, right now, this is enough.
But can I just ask you really briefly, because we don't have a huge amount of time left. You're talking about contentment happens in the body. Mm. But we all know that we have an internal negative narrative in the mind. Yeah. So how do you combat that?
Yeah. Now, Cormac, come here. Really, really, you put your finger on the pulse there. So as a people and as psychology, these kind of mental health people like me, we have over-focused on noticing when we're anxious, when we're sad, when we're lonely, when we're irritated. We've placed an emphasis on the deficit. So my suggestion for listeners, for my own well-being, is to notice the moments of contentment, because contentment is different. If you think about kind of stress, worry, anxiety, we get into a rabbit hole there of internal story and narrative. Yeah. Contentment is visceral, it's in the body, and it says, for a moment, I have all that I need.
And just recognise that and pierce the anxiety bubble.
Because, Cormac, what we appreciate, appreciates.
Okay. That's, look, a good note to leave it on, I think. Contentment is the theme of today. And Professor Paul Dalton, thank you very much indeed for that.